Voices in Time, recording life stories.
Okay, today's April 21st, 2011, and we're back again with Anne, and I think we have some older stories to go back and pick up before we get started.
Some I left out last week that I would like to get in there. And the first one is just because it's funny. And it has to do with my nursing and Sister Camilla. And I worked on 2 West as a nurse's aide before I went into training, because my dad wanted to make sure that that's what I wanted to do, because he couldn't understand how a daughter of his wanted to be a nurse, since he didn't like hospitals and the sight of blood. But anyway, Sister Camilla was a real character, and in fact, she locked me in the laundry room closet one day because we disagreed on something. I mean, she did it as a joke, but you know, she's so funny. She was so funny, and she was the supervisor of 2 West, the men's floor and surgical floor. And she got along with the men, except once in a while when anyone gave her trouble, she would really overcome that trouble by overcoming the patient. And for instance, this one time, we had a Baptist minister on the floor who had come in for surgery, and he had to have an enema the day before surgery. And the nurse came to Sister and she says, "He won't let me give him an enema." And the orderly happened to be off that day. And Sister says, "Give me that enema can." And she goes down there and she says, "Okay, buddy, let's get the rocks out of that bottom." And she gave it to him. He had no way he could keep from getting that enema. So, but she also, when I was a student, I lived on the 7th floor, and for some reason, she lived on the 7th floor also. She didn't live on the floor with the other nuns. And it was so funny because sometimes we would end up on the elevator with her going up to the 7th floor. And at the end of the day, she always had one of those enema cans in her hand, covered with a towel. And we knew that in that enema can, there was ice and a can of beer in the middle of it. So every night we knew what she was doing in her room, because we could smell the popcorn popping also. Well, one night after hours, I had a friend, and we went down to another girl's room, and we were carrying on in there, and we heard Sister's door open, and I said, "Uh-oh, we're in trouble." And so we went and ran to the closet and hid in the closet in this girl's room. Sister Camilla comes bursting into the room, and she's talking to the girl in the room, and she says, she's carrying on about after hours and we shouldn't be making noise and we should be in bed and all this and everything. And then as she went out the room, she says, "That goes for you in the closet also." So I just had to put that in there, because after moving in into the nurse's residence, I found out that those nuns were a lot different from the ones who taught me in grade school. They were also fun. Caught a couple of them doing the Charleston one day, and they were more fun and more down to earth than the ones I had experienced in grade school. But I loved them all, because we really miss them now in the schools. We need some more of that discipline. Okay, and another reason we earned our Naughty Nine title was I was on floor duty, but some of the girls, and about 4 of them in the Naughty Nine, borrowed Father Freeman's car to go out. Father Freeman was one of our teachers, and he had been my spiritual, he was a Jesuit, and he had been one of my spiritual director all through high school because he was from Rockhurst, and he taught us medical ethics. And we were, you know, friends. And so he let the girls borrow this car one night. Well, the next day he found it on fire because they had been smoking cigarettes in it the night before. That was another situation that they had to contend with. Also, I wanted to put in there that my dad had had a political job for almost 20 years as civil engineer, the chief surveyor for the highway department. And he lost it after in an election that put the Democrats out. I was a senior at that time. And after this happened to him, he had to buy a family car, because he lost the car with the job. So at the age of 20, I finally learned how to drive. And when we graduated, it was the year that we graduated from nursing. Like I told you, we were associated with St. Joseph's, was associated with St. Teresa's. And so the nine of us had to practice with the college group. So one afternoon when we had to practice, we had a car for part of us and we needed a second car. So I called my dad, whose new job was close to the hospital, and asked him if I could borrow the car. And it was one of the first times I had really driven by myself, you know, without him. So we went over, picked up the car, and the two cars went to practice at St. Teresa's. And a nun was also graduating. She had taken the nursing studies. And I had worked with her on the different floors and become her good friend. So she got in the car with us in the passenger seat. And I remember going back and forth on Main Street. She sat there with a rosary in her hand, and we were going down the street along the streetcar tracks. She had the rosary in her hand, praying the rosary that we would get there and back. Okay. So anyway,
did your dad teach you how to drive?
My dad taught me how to drive, yes. And my mother knew how to drive before. She took up driving again. So we were all very happy to have a car to drive. Well, I continuing on from where we left.
Okay.
I think, as I remember, we had moved from Iowa to Prairie Village. And Bill was still traveling to Iowa. Plus, he was also working in Minnesota. And we leave the first part of the week and come home the next weekend. My due date with the first baby was May 4th. So he stayed home a week ahead of time because the doctor had told me that I might have the baby early. It turned out he told me that because there was no sonograms or anything then. Because I was so big, I had three babies out of the 11 under 9 pounds. And Nick turned out to be 10 pounds. So when I got pregnant, I looked like if I fell, I was going to start rolling and never stop. When Lori was born finally on May 13th, which was late, very late, Bill was really behind in his work, and so he had to leave the day after he brought us home from the hospital. Well, it just so happened that was the day, that evening, we had the storm where the tornado hit Ruskin Heights. But while they were when they first started talking about it, they were saying that it was going to hit Prairie Village. And I remember standing there in front of the TV, holding Lori, and the doctor, I mean the guy on TV was saying, go to your basement right away. And I was standing there talking to him. I had all these stitches in me, and I was saying, if you knew how I felt, you wouldn't ask me to go down to the basement. And finally, as the storm hit and it got worse, it really was a bad storm. The wind was horrible. My next door neighbor, who had become my good friend, she and her husband rushed over. He grabbed Lori, and she helped me back to their house. And I stayed there until the storm was over. And then Bill's sister, Margie, and her husband, Jerry, came and got us to take us to spend the rest of the night with them in Overland Park. So that was a real experience. And it was one for Bill, too, because he didn't know it until the next morning. And he read in the paper, and it said in the Iowa paper that it had hit Prairie Village. And so he tried to call and call and call and couldn't get in because the lines were down. And he finally got in that afternoon and found out that we were okay. So it was hard on him, too. Our first five children, I want to tell you about all the children a little bit and introduce you to them. Tell you a little bit about each one, and we'll tell the stories about them and how we lived and everything later. These are just small samples of what's to come. Our first five children were born every year for five years. They came, and then every other year after that. Lori was our first, and she was born on May 13th, 1957. Lori is strong, and she has an inner strength and wisdom that gets her through life. And she is very giving and has always taken her role as oldest very seriously. As an example, the first time Lori and Jeff babysat, Jeff was her second one, she decided to have a fire drill about 11 p.m. and she woke up all the kids and rushed them outside to the front lawn, and then decided that for some reason that they might need some milk while they were out there if they had a fire. So she rushed back in, got a gallon of milk out of the refrigerator. And I often wondered, after I learned about it, what the neighbors would have thought if they had come by in our house in the middle of the night and seen all our kids out in front and Lori standing there with a gallon of milk. I'm sure they would have stopped. Lori was also very curious, and I might even call it nosy. she would always, I would go out and buy gifts for birthdays or Christmas, and she would, and then come home and hide it in the closet as they were coming home from school until I could hide it in a better place. And she would always, somehow she would always know, and she'd come to me and say, Mom, what is that in your closet? And then later I found out that she and Jeff took the hinges off the closet that was padlocked in the basement where Santa put his gifts. So, like I said, I think I would call it more nosy than curious. She is a bookkeeper and works for her two of her brothers, and she does a lot of work for them besides bookkeeping. And I admire her because I can only count on my fingers. she is a saint of the family, And I think everybody would agree with that. She is just beautiful. Jeff was born on May 31st, 1958. He was the 35th grandchild of Bill's mom and dad, but the first grandson with the last name of Hodes. So that was, seemed very special to everybody. He loved animals. In fact, he took one of them to school one morning for show and tell. And at recess time, he snuck in the window to check on the, I forget whether, I think it was a rabbit or something, or I don't know, really remember what it was. But it was the first time I had of any calls that I got from teachers. The only time, actually, that I had someone sneak in school instead of out. Like a typical boy, he loved to tease his sisters, and he had a huge, big heart. He loved to get in fights also on the way home from school, and he would get so mad at his sisters when they would try to break them up. And he just loved to wrestle and fight. He was the only one of our kids who took swimming lessons sitting on the side of the swimming pool. He played football, basketball, and baseball in grade school, and later was part of the soccer team that the Rockers boys got started at Rockers. Wendy was born on July 3rd, 1959. She's our curly head, always smiling, and her teachers called her the ray of sunshine. She will mother you, and she loved the babies, like all the other girls. But she especially, because she was more of a homebody than anyone, and still is more of a homebody. She also has a special gift of faith, which is apparent to all. She is an example of not only what you say, but also what you do. I said Lindy loved babies, and that all the girls did. I was blessed to have the girls at the top part of the family, because I couldn't have raised the little boys without them, and was afraid that they would get burnt out by the time they got married. But it seemed they were well prepared, and it was just the opposite. All my girls are so beautiful to me, inside and out. They have always been such a blessing. After Lindy was born, we moved to 9415 Manor Road in Leawood, and we would live there for the next 13 years. It was a Cape Cod, and we added on to it twice while we were there. I know our next door neighbors said we should have moved into the Brookside Hotel, because most of the houses out there in the new part of Leawood were smaller than we really needed, and that's why we added on to it, and they were huge additions. Jan was born after that on July 31st, 1960. She was such a good baby, our best, and she didn't talk until she was 3 years old, and hasn't stopped since. And you know exactly where you stand with Jan, because she says exactly what she thinks, no filter. She is easy to love, fun to be around, and she's always the first one to be there when you need her. She was Rocker's homecoming queen her senior year at Scion. And I have a story about her that is, when she went to Regis College, and when she graduated from Regis, came back home, Bill asked her, he says, what she learned after he had spent all this money on her. Well, she went in the kitchen, got a beer, brought it back, stood upside down on her head, and drank the beer. That was our Jan. Our fun girl. Nick was born December 6, 1961. He was born on St. Nicholas feast day. And that's why we named him Nicholas. But Bill told everybody we named him after Nick Savella, who was a mafia character here in town that had just been put in prison a couple of weeks before that. Nick loves games, and he has a great imagination. He never had to find anything for him to do because he had such a great imagination. We used to watch him play football in the front yard, where he'd throw the ball up and then catch it again like he was catching a punt and run down the field and make his touchdown. He didn't really start growing until high school, so it was a big thrill when he made the touchdown of the last game of his eighth grade season. He has a dry sense of humor and comes out with what I call Nickyisms. He seemed always content with what he had. He never asked for anything. And made good friends and was a good friend. He played soccer at Rockers and SMU. Our Anne Marie was born January 15th, 1964. She is the youngest girl, and she was taken over by her big sister, Lori, who would get her out of her crib in the mornings and change her, dress her, and bring her down to the kitchen before Lori would go to school. Annie was always a true girl, even though she was in between two boys, and the rest of the family, the rest of her siblings were boys. She was an A-plus student, and so she as a reward, she was able to go to Hawaii with us and her five siblings. Her teachers loved her because she was so sweet and such a good student. While I'm talking about the trip to Hawaii, I just want to put in here that when we got to Hawaii with those six kids and found out how much the food was, we gave them each $5 every morning and told them they would spend that on their breakfast and lunch, and we'd see them at dinner. And actually, Jan came home with change. Anne Marie was not only a good student, but she's very compassionate. She has taught our family a lot, as she is my hero, and because of the way she handles life. She played soccer for Maryville and St. Louis and received a nursing associate degree there, and then later a theology degree from Rockhurst. All our children loved and played sports, and Monsignor Ty and Father Cleary used to come over many Sundays, have a bowl of chili with us, and watched football games with us during football season. And Monsignor Ty used to tell me he loved watching the boys watch the football games as much as he loved watching the football games. Then the last five were all boys, as I said. And Joe was born on May 25th, 1965, the year after Anne Marie. We named him Herman Joseph because he was Bill's mom and dad's 50th grandchild, and his father was Herman Joseph. So we named Joe after him. My dad, who was all Irish, would say there are only two kinds of people in the world, and I'm sure you've heard that same thing, that the two kinds were people who were Irish and who wanted to be Irish.
And whenever he made fun of anybody, he would call them Hermann the German. So now he had a daughter married to Hermann the German's son and had a grandson named Hermann the German. And he finally stopped calling other people Hermann the German, at least that in front of us. Joe was a good athlete, and he played soccer and wrestled at Rockhurst. He earned a varsity letter in wrestling his freshman year. I used to kid and say, it's because you have nosebleeds and you turn those guys off. He was the first freshman ever chosen to go to Honduras with a group to deliver money raised for the missions, the Jesuit missions. Joe also has the distinction of totaling a car within 48 hours of buying it. And he also met his wife in third grade. His Bell sister, Martha, Joe's aunt, told me one time that no one had the right to be as good looking as Joe. Chris was born March 22nd, 1967. He was named 4 days after I suspected I was pregnant. Because the reason was because we were sponsors of a group called the Christophers. And they were Canadian teens who made money during the winter to go out in the summertime to work with the Indians on their reservations, and then a couple of inner city cities. They were hard workers and would had a long, hard summers, and they would return to Bethlehem Cave in South Dakota, was owned by the Benedictines, and to share their experiences with each other because they would split up into groups. We were there in South Dakota at one of their gatherings, a couple of their gatherings, and at one of them they called us to the front of the group, of the whole group, and they sang a song to us and gave us a wonderful card that each of them had written a personal note on, and they were very thankful for what we had done for them. And so I got really emotional, and I had just told Bill 4 days earlier that I thought I was pregnant, but I told them that as I was expecting a new baby, and that we were going to name him Christopher after them. And of course, like I said, there was no sonograms. I had no idea whether I was having a boy or a girl. But from that time on, in my pregnancy, it was always he was always Christopher. And I remember when I went to the hospital to deliver him, we got out of the elevator and the walls were painted pink, and I said they should be painted blue because I'm going to have a boy. And so Chris was born as we had expected, and we named him Christopher Matthew. Chris had that cute baby face that always drew people to him. And then as he grew out of that, he grew more to be like Joe. In fact, when I looked out the front window, when they were playing ball, I would get the two of them mixed up at first because they looked a lot alike. And I always said Chris had an old soul because of the questions he asked. He had an old soul and seemed to have a peaceful, spiritual depth to him. And as he got older, I really expected his opinions, but he also had a lot of common sense. He was a good soccer player, and he wrestled at Rockers his freshman sophomore year. I have a funny story to tell about that because I can't wait to tell it, so I'm going to tell it now. We had Edith that came to our house to clean, and she would stay with the boys when they were older, and mainly in high school. She loved the boys, and she would play, you know, tease them, and they would tease back and forth, and she was just a good gal, and we all loved each other. But anyway, one time when she was staying with us, one of the neighbors picked her up to take her to Rockers to watch Chris's wrestling match. Well, Edith got all involved in the wrestling match, and all of a sudden, and she stood up and real loud yelled down to the floor, "Don't you hurt my baby!" And Chris was so embarrassed he could hear, he heard her yelling. So anyway, she was so funny. And you'd ask her, how she, you know, "How are you, Edith?" And she'd say, "Oh, just still old fat and ugly." I had a miscarriage between Chris and Ted. This happened to be the 12th, end up to be the 12th that we always said we were going to have. People would ask, "You always said you were going to have a dozen. What happened to the 12th? And I say, "Well, I did have the 12th pregnancy. I was 3 months along when I lost the baby. Didn't actually know what gender it was, but the children, the older children named it Pat because it could either be a boy or girl's name, and they were just really, really sad to have lost the baby because we had just told them that I was pregnant. Okay, Ted was born after that, December 11th, 1969. Ted was a quiet baby, sort of laid. He was laid back as he grew older. Lindy always loved to mother him, and because he really never asked for anything, and she was always there trying to figure out what he needed next. He was a great student and has a good mind. I think of the year he was in eighth grade, that he was playing football, and the quarterback on the football team could not remember the plays. So Ted always ran the plays in and called the plays for the quarterback, I'd never seen that done before and have never seen it done since. He played football at Rockhurst, and I kept telling Ted when he was younger that he wouldn't grow because he wouldn't eat anything besides peanut butter or mashed potatoes with 57 sauce on top. But he turned out to be the tallest of them all, he's 6'2". Ted made the National Honor Society at Rockers and finished engineering at Villanova in 4 years. Which was good. Most of the time it was 5 years. He gives of himself and he gets things done. Fence was born August 8th, 1971. He had night and day mixed up for 5 months. And I was exhausted during that time, but loved the time, special time with Vince. It was our bonding time because it was always busy and noisy during the day. I think he knew that and just did that on purpose. But something good came out of it because I had Bill had a woman, I had a, someone come in 3 days a week, and she'd walk in to the door and I'd go into bed. But then we kept her for after Vince started sleeping all night, and I started going to the Jewish Community Center, which we belong to, and exercising, and I got back down to 108 pounds, and just felt really good. Going back to Vince, he would rather play with the vacuum than his toys, and would ride the sweeper when anybody turned it on. It was his big plaything. When he played ball with the older kids, they would say that he was a good natural athlete, and they could already tell that when he was very young. He loved sports, and he won many games for his teams. It was always exciting to watch him. When he went to Rockhurst, he was voted peer counselor during his years at Rockhurst, which meant that he would go to some place to get trained to be a counselor for his peers. So if anybody needed to talk things with someone their own age, you know, that he was always there for them. He was a good student, and he received athletic scholarship award, which meant he was a good athlete and scholar. He received that his senior year. And he had many guests that so personable. When he played football, it was always a thrill for the family to go watch him. Because he played offense and defense, and how he got to the varsity team his sophomore year was, and he was determined to make the varsity team as his sophomore year. His brother Ted played football, and he would stay after practice with Vince, and Vince and helped Vince when kick balls. He held the ball while Vince kicked balls over the goal post. And so Vince made the varsity team his sophomore year, which started out his time on they eventually made other positions. But he was kicker. And the last part of this, the football season, they went to Jefferson City to play them, and Jefferson City was their main opponent. He kicked the goal with 40 seconds left and won the game for them. And I had an aunt that lived in Jefferson City, and she said the front page of the paper the next day was, "A little sophomore beat us." it was just a thrill. And the coach later on said that was one of his biggest thrills in coaching, was that he kicked that Vince kicked that goal at the last of the game to win it. He went to the University of San Diego, and he just hurt his knee playing around. So then in going into his sophomore year, so it really ended his football. And he came back to Kansas City and went to Rutgers because he had to have surgery and then rehab, and he just stayed here. Vince has many gifts, and I always kept saying, I was always afraid he'd get a big head, which I didn't have to worry about at all. And I used to say, just remember, your gifts are from God. I'm sure he got tired of me reminding him, but I really didn't have to do that because he was never, ever showed any sign of getting a big head. He was always personable, and he had a quiet assurance. And he's successful in whatever he does and very generous. In the summer of 1972, we moved to the house we raised all our kids in. They were born in the one on Manor, and except for Billy, our baby. And we moved to 1035 Westover in Kansas City, back to Visitation Parish that Bill had grown up in. Bill had always said a big family needed a big, older house to live in. So this was the completion of his dream to live in back in Visitation in a big older house. Billy, our youngest, was born October 30th, 1973. We almost didn't make it to the hospital. All my pregnancies lasted, the labors lasted 2 days with Billy. He came fast, and he came out running and never stopped. Billy always thought he was old as his brothers and thought he could do everything that they could do. He would go to other practices with them and run up and down the sidelines, and would think he was, you know, one of the older boys. And then when Vince was in first grade and played soccer, Billy would go to every one of his soccer games, soccer practices, and like I said, run up and down. And the biggest thrill was when his coach said, "Hey, Billy, come on over here. You go on in substitute for one of the boys." And Billy just thought he was in seventh heaven. And everybody got a big kick out of him going in there and playing. He seemed to always know everybody when I'd take him out to the store or someplace else, because the kids would always take him with them whenever they would go someplace. And it seems like he had the kind of personality that loved people, and he always connected with anybody, and always happy, he was confident of himself, positive. He loves life, and he has a good time living life, and he sees good in all. So I have lots of stories about Billy getting lost. He would wander off at different times, and oh my gosh, it's a wonder he's still with us. Each child was welcomed into our family with lots of love and as a gift. And each one was unique And I was accused of having a favorite, but each one of my children, each of them was my favorite for who they were, because they were, each one was unique. As parents, we understand how the love of God the Father for His children. And we understand how when they quarrel, as children do, how He wants them to, how much He wants them to love each other. And we always wanted the best for our family, each of the children, as God wants for each of us. Our family is close. Their love, each loves and cares for the other. And Bill, my husband Bill, loved being a father. And he loved to preach to him. And I feel like the kids have gotten a lot from that. Our older son told us one time, "Mom, you didn't think I was listening, but I was, you know." It was hard to for them to listen sometimes, I know, but they were listening. Our faith is strong. All of us have a strong faith, and Jesus is our rock. And we also have a great devotion to our Mother Mary. I just think that our family is special. Of course, I am prejudiced. The first part of being a mother was hard because I was pregnant every year and could hardly wait till the kids went down to nap during my first 3 months, because I was so sleepy that I would fall asleep before they did. Mm-hmm. And Bill continued traveling during the first six children. Mm-hmm. And
how often did he travel?
Every week.
Okay.
And he would leave on Monday morning, come home on Friday night. And by the time he got home, I was talking baby talk. And I wanted to go out to dinner, and he wanted a home-cooked meal. Mm-hmm. And he worked hard, you know, for us. So it was hard for him to not be at home in a motel mm-hmm. every night. Mm-hmm. And at that time, we didn't have cell phones. And some weeks, I did not talk to him the whole week until he showed up at the door. Mm-hmm. His dad worried a little bit about him drinking, you know, because so many of the salesmen would do that after they got back to their hotel rooms and were lonely. But everything was okay. Mm-hmm. And when he came home, I had been working with the children one way, and it was sort of confusing sometimes, mm-hmm. because he would do things another way. But I loved it every time he walked in the door, because the children would all run and gang up on him and could hardly wait to be with him for a while. He would go down to the office on Saturday mornings, but then we had him the rest of the day, mm-hmm. and all day Sunday until he left again.
And how did you handle being home alone all week with the kids? Did you rely a lot on your girlfriends and neighbors and the church?
Well, my best girlfriend Bev was away, mm-hmm. in the Army with her husband, My mother had started working for a friend who had opened up a dress shop. I didn't have a car. My mother-in-law would come pick me up one night a week and take us to her house for dinner. So the only one I really had a lot of contact with was my next door neighbor, Nadine, whom I had become a very good friend of ours. She was a little older, actually about close to 10 years older, probably. And she was there at her house all the time because she was, at that time, most of the mothers stayed at home. And so we saw each other almost every day. And we enjoyed each other, and she was not only a good friend, but a good teacher as well, and she was spiritual. She, we just sort of clicked from the time we met, which was good to have a neighbor like that. And she was the one I told you that came over when and grabbed us when in the middle of the storm. And her children were older than ours, but they were good kids, and so our children had a good example. Mm-hmm. Even our older children, because we were only there for 3 years. I have to tell you, and I don't know why I'm thinking of this right now, but I had a double stroller and took the kids down to Bruce Smith at the Village, and it was when I was pregnant with the fourth, and I had the three little ones, and I was trying to get out the door with my package and the babies, and a couple older women were waiting to go out the door, and the older woman helped me by holding the door open, and she looked at me and she says, "Honey, don't you know what causes those?" And I looked her in the eye, and I gave her Bell's answer, and I said, "Well, by the time I found out, we had already formed the habit." And I left her there with her mouth open. I would get, as the kids got older, I would get remarks about that every once, like that every once in a while, but most of them were the opposite. Mm-hmm. And most people enjoyed watching us.
I'm sure everybody marveled.
And as we'd stop at the stoplights, people would count. I could see people counting, you know, from the other car.
So to ask the question that everybody probably has is, how did you do it? I mean, did you just run? Did you have a really schedule?
People always ask me that question. Yeah. Well, my set answer was, only by the grace of God and plenty of aspirin. And it was only by the grace of God, because I'll tell you, the first time I really was at my wit's end was when I was pregnant with Jan, Lindy was actually an infant. Mm-hmm. And we were home by ourselves. I had been home by myself all week. I didn't have a dryer. I had two in diapers, so I spent a lot of time in the basement. And this was on a hot day that I'm recalling to you. We were cooped up in the living room and dining room because that was the only rooms that had an air conditioner in it, and they were like L-shaped. And I had Lindy and Lori and Jeff in the room, living room with me. And Lindy was in a bassinet, and Lori and Jeff started fighting over a toy or something. Well, they ended up pulling the bassinet over, and Lindy rolled out. And I picked Lindy up, and I sat in my rocker, and you know, she was crying, and I was patting her, consoling her, and I started crying, and I thought, oh my, you know, oh my gosh, and I just was sort of at my wits' end. And that's when I really turned to God and brought him into my life. I said, you know, you have to help me with this. I have these three little ones. I'm by myself here. And you just have to help me, you know, give me the strength to do all this in you know, your love. So that was in the first time that I really invited him into my life, made him my friend. He had always been my friend, but made him my partner, you know. I just learned to bring him into everything. The second time was when we lived on Manor Road. I'm going into the spiritual side now, actually, because it was in the genes, I think, to be, because, and that's why I was drawn to Bill, because I knew that I could see that in him, even though he really didn't express it outwardly. I could see that in him and in the things he would say that helped me to know. I think, like I said before, God had his hand in our relationship from the very beginning. Bill might have not have known it, but I did. But this time I'm speaking of the second time. Mm-hmm. Bill made a curcio. A man had told him about it, and it was new to the Catholic Church. It was called a curcio because Spanish had first started it, and it was lessons in Christianity. And so it was deepening people in their faith life. The priest that gave it here was a Franciscan priest, and he only gave it to the men. Most of the curcios, all the other curcios around the country were given to both the men and the women. But this priest was, again, he was a German, and the Germans believe that the men were not like now. I mean, almost everybody believed that the men were the head of the house and the women was the heart. And the Germans seem to have I have a hard time explaining what I thought it was, but it was the fathers were very dominant in the German heritage. They were not only head of the households, but very dominant over everything. And that is the heritage that this priest came from. So he only gave it to the men and said that the women could make it through the husbands, make this curcio through the husbands. Anyway, so Bill made the curcio weekend. He walked in the door, and I could tell something had really happened to him. And I said, and after the end of the day, I said, Bill, tell me about it. And he says, I can't really tell you about it. He said, I will just have to show you. He had taken the folding chair out to the front lawn and just sat there and, you know, was in deep thought. So we became more spiritual, and as a family, we knelt down every night, said prayers together. We had a round table. We said night prayers together, and it was good because if anything was bothering the kids, it would come out in the prayer, in their prayer time, because each one of them would have something to pray and thank God for, thank Jesus for that day. And he would, if he had a problem with anything, it would come out in his prayer. So it was very good, very good. We would have anyway have taken the kids to Mass every Sunday, but we gradually got more and more involved in the church. And we had the Curcio group from our parish was close-knit. The men met every Saturday morning. And Bill decided after that he was going to quit traveling so much and be home. And so with the family. And so he got someone, by that time he was sales manager and would hire and fire the salesman. So he got hired a sales manager to take his place. And stayed home in the main office. The company was at that time was being run by Bill and his brother because his father had died. Well, his father actually hadn't died, but he was retired from the company. I had a problem. Because I had always thought that I was the spiritual one in the family, you know? And here he was what you would call reborn, you know? And he had something that I did not have. And I wanted to have that. Oh, I started thirsting for it. And I could not make that Curcio through him. Bill was German. And he was addictive. He was an addictive person. And every time, and he was addicted. And he became sort of overbearing, you know. And it just turned me off. But I cooperated with everything because I wanted what he had. And I knew it was good for our family. But I wanted what he had. So I flew to Des Moines, forget the name of the city in Iowa, Cedar Rapids, Iowa, with a friend who also made the Curcio, to make the Curcio. I came away, feeling like I was also 8 months pregnant with Chris, so I was way out there. And but I also came back with feeling like what I had learned up there, what I had gotten up there, I had before. I had already had. And we even flew up in a private plane. And I was belonged to a friend of ours. And they flew up with us because they had made the Curcio. And I remember on the way back saying, I was sitting behind Paul, the pilot, and I was thinking, oh my gosh, if he knew how sick I was and ready to throw up on his back any minute, he wouldn't be up there laughing. But anyway, I made it home okay. And then I dragged Bill to the marriage encounter. I went to, you know, all the renewals that was available at that time. And we came back from the marriage encounter feeling like we knew everything and already experienced what they taught. And each thing I went to, I just felt like I already knew and had. So Karen, who was was my friend, and we were in a group of four that we met every week. And the four of us were different personalities, but we jived and we loved each other, and we would have best spiritual meetings with the best fun time after each one. And her 17-year-old got leukemia. And we went through that with her. And when he was very, very bad, she needed to get away for a little bit. And we all felt like we were all a part of this. We went to a small retreat house in Concordia, Kansas. And I said to the Lord, I said, something good better come out of this, because Jan was up for homecoming queen. And I said, I've always told you that you came first. And Karen, really, I feel like I would, you know, be letting Karen down if I didn't go, because she depended a lot on us for her stability. And something did come out of it, because I found out that Mary Lou, one of the girls, had the gift of tongues, was a charismatic, and she invited me to come to one of the meetings. And Jan also became the homecoming queen, which I was really hurt to have missed it, you know. And I really felt that I should have been there with her also, but, you know, I was just it was just something that happened. Well, I had, was nursing Billy, and so I looked into the charismatic group, and I called the girl who ran the seminars at St. Anne's Church, and that was the closest charismatic group around, and it just happened to be the only women's group. So when I called to talk to her about it, her name was Marion Carr, she said, "Anne, you could give these seminars, you know, and I thought, oh my gosh, I've got everybody fooled, because here they are even thinking I could give the seminars when I don't have what Bill has, you know. So I made, when at the first they seminar, part of the seminar was on a Tuesday, when I went to it, they were given these sessions every week for 7 weeks, whereas most of them were done over a weekend, but ours was done each week for 7 weeks. We were introduced to each other and received a book, and it had the outline of what each of the 7 weeks was going to be about. And the third week, there was a prayer in it that gave your whole life to Jesus, and you said a prayer inviting him into your heart through his spirit, inviting the Holy Spirit into your heart, Jesus to send his spirit in, and also to ask for the gift of tongues. Well, I took that little pamphlet home, and I read it every single day, prayed the prayer to Jesus, and before the baptism in the Holy Spirit the third week. I had received it at home, and I was by myself. I was sitting in a chair crocheting while the rest of the family was watching the story about the Jews on TV. I just couldn't stand to watch it because I just couldn't. And so I was sitting there by myself. I started receiving tongues, and which really many people know about it, and they think that charismatics are strange, but they do have a special gift of the Spirit, and work in the Spirit, and I now had what Bill had, and by the time the third session came, and the rest of the group received the baptism in the Spirit, I helped. They invited me to help lay hands on them and help them with that. And they asked me to be part of the core group giving the seminars, starting with the next seminar. So I was very blessed and felt like I could handle anything, even all these teenagers at home. And because we had kids, teenagers on down to a baby, you know, mm-hmm. and things were getting wild. So I just felt like the family was whole now.
Yeah.
That Bill and I were on the same page.
Okay. So did you make a conscious decision to stop having children? Or
no, never made a conscious decision to stop having children because I was told not to by my new doctor after the sixth child. No, Dr. Cooper delivered the first seven, mm-hmm. but I had been told by a specialist that I should stop having children. Should have stopped having children after Anne Marie, and I had a problem with bleeding and almost lost Chris later mm-hmm. on, mm-hmm. and I did have that miscarriage, mm-hmm. and always wanted a big family, mm-hmm. and I was kept on. Until I was pregnant with Billy, the doctor said, "I am sorry to have to tell you this, but I think you're going to have a hysterectomy mm-hmm. after this baby." And he told me on a day that I was really sort of worn out and everything, and I felt like I was being pulled apart. And I walked out of the office with big smile on my face, and I felt like I had pretty well accomplished what I had, and I loved each of my kids, wouldn't trade them for anything, but was in a way relieved that I didn't have to, that I didn't wasn't going to go through another pregnancy. Mm-hmm. But
so this is your family.
Yeah, I felt like my family was complete.
This has been a Voices in Time production. To learn more, call 913-831-0848.